Hello, my name is Marie Fisher. I'd like to welcome you to our Women on Wednesday series. Our theme this semester is Making an Impact, Women's Leadership and Community Organizing. A few housekeeping items before we get started. Please turn off all cell phones. Stay in your seats quietly until 12:50, and please be respectful of your neighbors. Also, if you could please fill out the evaluation, should be that pink sheet, as we do use this information for future programming. Our topic today is titled Challenging Racism in Our Community. And with the recent events on campus, this topic is more relevant than ever. For more than 100 years, community organizations all around the country have been pivotal in leading local initiatives that challenge the problem of racism. Many are aware of the powerful history of the NAACP to organize communities to fight against racism, but not knowledgeable about innovative projects such as Create Community, or the role of the United Way. Our panelists will discuss local efforts and outcomes in the ongoing struggle for racial justice. Idris Simon Nebe is a graduate of St. Cloud State University with a degree in public administration from the Department of Political Science, as well as a Master's of Science degree in the Social Responsibility Program, College of Education. Currently, she is Associate Director for Outreach in the Office of Admissions here at SCSU, where she has been employed for the past 7 years. Prior to working in admissions, she worked at the Women's Center as well as the Central Minnesota Sexual Assault Center as a Communities of Color Outreach Coordinator. She teaches as adjunct faculty at SCSU and is involved with numerous committees and efforts, including the local NAACP chapter, to dismantle racism and promote women's rights. Noreen Dunnels has served as the Chief Professional Officer for United Way of Central Minnesota since February of 1999. In her role, she works closely with the Board of Directors to set policy and direction for the organization and 15 full-time staff to carry out the mission of the organization, which is to improve people's lives by mobilizing the caring power of Central Minnesota. In 2003, Dunnels served as president of United Ways of Minnesota, and during 04 and 06, she was a member of the Governor's Workforce Development Council. She is serving her third term with the Stearns-Benton Workforce Council and is currently chair of Create Community, a community anti-racism initiative focused on creating racial harmony and a welcoming community for all Central Minnesotans. We are very grateful to have them both with us here today. Please join the Women's Center in welcoming Idris Simon Nebe and Noreen Dunnels.
Thank you, everyone, for showing up today. It's kind of odd when someone's reading about you and you're sitting here, you don't know what to do, you shake your head or smile. Yeah, that's me. But I do understand why people do it, you know, in programs such as this, because you do want to make sure that the person speaking has some background and some content about the information that we're going to be talking about today. So as she mentioned, my name is Idris Simon Nebe. I've been on this campus a long time. I've been a student, as you can see, been in these seats like you all have. I actually worked with the Women's Center doing programming to actually have events just like this. I looked at a list of resumes and some of the accomplishments that women have done and tried to decide who we should bring to campus. And so to be asked to be someone here on the panel today talking is an honor to me. So thank you. I got my start at the Women's Center actually fall of 2000, and we did other events like Take Back the Night and other activities. And so I wanted to just mention that because if people are interested in doing things that promote women, I definitely encourage that. And sometimes those fields are one that have to be created by women. And so no matter what your major is, if you have that commitment to empowering the lives of women, just keep that with you as you go along, because there will be other opportunities that you may not be able to foresee. Talking about racism, it's often, I find, a uncomfortable conversation to start having with people. It's almost at times socially unacceptable to start saying, so what do you think about racism? And, you know, how do you feel? Are you a racist? And what's your experience with racism? And what I find is that that is one of the only ways to kind of have an honest conversation about it. It's not always in a large forum like this, but it's getting to know people who are different than yourselves and who are from diverse communities and sitting down and talking about different issues and talking about your values. There is a strategy that women use during the women's movement that is a favorite of mine, and that is the consciousness rising kind of dinner tables that people had in their homes. I really like that for several reasons. One is because I love to eat, and another is because I love to cook. And I also love to have my friends and family over. And I purposely don't have any TV in my living room. Well, I do for the moment, but it's going to be removed. But normally, I don't have a TV in the living room because when people come over, I want to talk with them and discuss different issues. And I don't want to just sit and watch TV and someone else's programming. So, and that is one strategy that I would recommend for this issue. Or any other controversial issue, just inviting people over for dinner and talking about different issues, the issue that's going on right now on our campus with the wall. There may be some things people want to ask that they're afraid to ask. And so in the privacy of your home or in their home or out for a dinner, you don't have to necessarily be in a home, but you could be around some food, is a good way to start the conversation. A nice thing about conversations around meals, at least in my household, they tend to get heated and you have a lot of boundaries on what you can and what you cannot say. But in the end, they kind of end in a loving way. And I do have an example. Yesterday, my older sister is staying with us for a while, and I had cooked a pot of soup. And I guess she decided when I came to work to doctor it up with some onions and a little bit more salt. And so when I came home to eat it, the onions were crunchy and it was a little bit too salty. And so we had a heated little debate about that. I said, "Don't ever touch my food. What were you thinking about?" And she said, "You know, I'm your big sister." And at the end of the night, we ended with, "I love you." And sometimes you have to have those spaces to talk about things that are uncomfortable, not just the salt, but again, about racism and about other things that are uncomfortable. And in doing that, tell your culture, tell your values. There's a lot of lessons that I learned growing up. And to be honest with you, I feel being groomed and taught by my family. They're always telling me, you know, you need to be doing this and you need to dress this way and act that way. And those are strong values that they have. And there are times when I realize with a diverse group of friends that I have that sometimes my values are in direct conflict with others' values. And so we need to find a way that we're going to be able to agree to disagree or to get along. And so without having that communication, it becomes difficult. And I find people base what they know about other cultures on what they've seen on the TV or what their buddies have told them. And sometimes that's stereotyping and just flat out wrong. So you need to do that. When I first came to St. Cloud, I told you that I started working in the Women's Center in 2000. But I actually came here in 97 as a student. And I am from the Twin Cities originally. But I had moved to Georgia for college. I thought that's the place for me. And I went there and decided, nah, I'll come back home to Minnesota. And so has anyone been to Georgia before? Atlanta in particular? Mm-hmm. Okay, those who've raised their hand, you know, it's a very black place to be. You know, there's a lot of African Americans there. And so moving from the Twin Cities to Georgia, that was a culture shock. But moving from Georgia to St. Cloud was a real culture shock on the other side. And so I remember, I didn't come to high school straight after, I didn't come to college straight after high school. And so by the time I did get here, I was so serious, like, okay, I need to get my degree, I need to finish. And so some of the social things I didn't take part in initially, and I really wasn't conscious of until one day I was in English class. Excuse me, it was effective listening, so go figure. But anyway, I was in this effective listening class, and I wasn't listening. And I was sitting in the back, and I was thinking, okay, what do I need to do to get an A in this class, like most students? And we got on the issue of diversity. And one of the students, I don't even remember what the professor asked. I remember the professor, he's still here, but I don't remember his question, but I remember one of the students saying, I've never seen a black person before. And I woke up then, I kind of woke up to St. Cloud, and I've been kind of awake ever since. And I said, excuse me, you've never seen a black person ever? Like at the store, like, you know, just in your neighborhood? He said, well, no, I'm from a small town. I've never seen a black person, only on TV. And so I said, okay. I said to myself, well, mentally, everything he knows and, you know, about black people is probably going to be based on, you know, some stereotyping and some myths. And so if I'm the first black person that he's met, you know, I have to really be a good role model and you know, have some positive impacts when it comes to him. And also to be open to this classroom. I right away realized that a lot of the students were a lot younger than myself, traditional age students who came straight from high school. So I said, I need to make myself available to them to ask questions and so they can learn and we can have a learning experience. I don't have that much experience myself with a small town. And so there were some things that I did learn in our conversations and being open to one another. And one of the things I remember I do want to share was that students from small town, they work very, very hard. And the ones that I met in my experience as a student here, they didn't have the same concepts of financial aid, and so I found that intriguing. That's a bit of a side note, but we were able to make an exchange as far as culture and values and upbringing go. So I recommend that you all, you have those opportunities and that you find people that are open to you and having those difficult conversations. There's a lot of benefits to diversity. And some of them are personal knowledge. I mean, there's nothing worse than someone stating something factual and then you know that it's completely wrong. It just kind of discredits everything else that comes out of their mouth. So you do want to make sure that you get to know people and that you do some research. It also benefits the family. My son, he's 5 years old, and he goes to school right down the road, and he has a ton of questions about black and white and Asian, and he's just so curious right now. And so, you know, it puts a lot of responsibility on me to make sure that I'm kind of molding his mind in a way that is that allows him to work with a lot of diversity in a growing global economy and society, you know. So there's a lot of pressure there. And I am in an intercultural marriage. My husband is from West Africa. And so he's really curious now about Africans and black. He wants to know, Mom, are you black? And am I an African? So, you know, there's other dimensions to diversity other than just the traditional, what we think of as race relationships and white and black. And so, you know, there's a lot of benefits there. And then I also think there's benefits to the community when it comes to cultural conflicts and tension that people have. And I think that we've all had situations that we've read about in the newspaper or different blogs, and not, of course, here, but, you know, over there, those people who have racism in their cities and in their institutions. And we thought to ourselves, now that could have been resolved with a conversation. If you got both parties together and you talked to each one of them, that could have been resolved. It didn't have to be this big deal that it turned into. And so, again, I find in the communities that I've lived in and worked in, people have a easier time working and living with one another when they have more experience with diversity. I grew up in the Twin Cities, which isn't the most diverse place in the world, but where I lived, it was. Right in the inner city, South Minneapolis. I didn't have all of these perceptions and struggles and conflicts that I have experienced since I've moved into St. Cloud. They didn't even really exist. I had a lot of friends from a lot of different backgrounds, and I thought that's the way it was supposed to be. I thought that's the way it was. And even when it came time for my son to go to school, that was one thing I was really concerned about. I said, how am I gonna reproduce that kind of experience that I had growing up in Minneapolis. You know, where diversity is just something that you, to some extent, take for granted. You know, there's Native people. You know, there's Asian people. You know, there's Latino people and African people, and you also feel good about your own group and it, you know, amongst the other groups. How am I going to do that? I was very nervous about that because I want him to know his culture, and I also want him to be proud of it. So it's an additional struggle here, and I find that for myself, I have to get personally involved, and I have joined the PTA at his school, and I do try to get involved and create that change because I am, you know, a member of this community. I thought I would get my degree and move on, but I'm here, and so I feel so I feel a responsibility to get involved when I can. Moving past diversity, and I don't want to take up too much more time because I do want to let my co-presenter speak, but I want to say that diversity and sharing cultures and recipes and foods and spices are very important, as I mentioned initially, for having that exchange. But the definition of racism, since that's the topic we're charged with talking about today, that includes power and power over communities of color is one that I like to talk about a little bit more. I identify more with, and I see it more problematic, and I see it more as a ill that the entire community needs to work on because it kind of cuts across all of the issues that we all have. And I think in an economy right now, I think people are starting to get it with our current president that we really all have to work together to make sure that we're okay as citizens in this country. But that is the more serious issue for me. And, you know, once people have power over others and their livelihood and their ability to own homes and to pay bills and to feed their family and to pull themselves up by the bootstraps, so the old saying goes, which I'm hoping that is going away, it becomes more difficult and it becomes more of a problem. And then there's a lot of fear associated with it, in my opinion. And so people don't want to share resources. And so I like to come back to that when people have more questions. But I do want to put that out there because I think too much we get stuck on the diversity part. And we do it to an extent where I feel as if it's not really getting at the heart of some of the issues. So that's one thing. I do want to talk about briefly, and I want to give everyone a chance to ask questions because, I think that exchange is where people really learn and people really walk away with a message, at least the one I want to give today. The other thing I wanted to talk about briefly is some of the things that I've done to dismantle racism or address racism is my work with the Women's Center and the Central Minnesota Sexual Assault Center. I was a woman of color advocate there, working with women who were new to the community, who needed services. I also worked with Anna Marie's, and so that was very rewarding for me. One thing that has been very important, though, for giving me the tools to be able to do presentations like this and also to effect some change in the office where I work has been the CARE anti-racism team. And I know that you may talk a little bit about it also, but the acronym stands for the Community Anti-Racism Initiative. And that was a team that was commissioned by former President Roy Seigel in 2004 to kind of look at racism on an institutional level at St. Cloud State University. And so there is a group of us who took on this project, and we went to a retreat and we tried to decide amongst ourselves how are we going to affect the campus, and we came up with some shared definitions of racism and what's going on our campus. And I just, it was a period for me where I grew a lot in my understanding because I feel as if coming from communities of color, your natural reaction or response to racism is anger, you know, and especially when you see it happening to your loved ones, and so it's so frustrating. So that is a group that's very active on campus. They do have workshops. Have people gone to any CARE workshops? Can I see a show of hands? Okay, good. So I'm in good company, and people know what I'm talking about. But and that's one area where I was very active. Other things that I do to take a leadership role against racism is I've worked with my family. Things that I know, we do sit and we talk about it. It's not just soup and other things. We get together and talk about some of those important issues. And I also teach here at St. Cloud State as adjunct faculty in the community studies program, one of the racial issue courses. And in that course, I use this book, pardon me, it's Howard Zinn, A People's History of the United States. Not Stern, no. We definitely don't want his rendition of the United States history, but Howard Zinn, who is fabulous. And I don't know if people have read his book at all either, but he's just awesome. He's a professor from the East Coast, and I recommend everyone pick that up and read it. And I'm sure you'll probably have some exposure to it here at St. Cloud, too. And another resource that I use when I'm teaching that class is the movie Roots. Has anybody seen that? Just a couple of people? Okay, good. Roots is a story, for those of you who haven't watched it, it's a story of the saga of American family. And what it actually is the story of two families, one black family and one white family, and slave owners and slaves. And so it's a very interesting movie, and I find for my students that the combination of the visual and the mental, they seem to really get the whole issue of how the United States is kind of founded on this body of racism. And so it's a moving and interesting story. I feel like with certain age groups, people kind of feel like, well, that was back then, and what does that have to do with right now? And some people were never told certain stories, and some people have missed pieces going along. And so it's very important. It's a very, in my opinion, gut-wrenching class. The movie itself is very difficult to watch for those of you who have seen it. And it's nice to have the book, though. The movie is written by a black professor. And also he has a book, The Roots. And this book, Howard Zinn, is written by a white male. And I noticed that in my class when that are predominantly white students are kind of struggling with this, it's nice to kind of go back and forth between the two authors to kind of find some meaning and some justification, because the way the movie kind of sets up the construct, it's a lot of people feel a tremendous amount of guilt when that's not really the intent. The intent is more so to kind of give a history for our current situation in the United States around race relations. So I've said a lot, and I don't want to take up hog all the time, but I do want to make sure we have questions left over, and I would like to, at this time, turn it over to my co-presenter, Norianne.
Thank you, Idris. Thank you, and I want to thank the Women's Center for inviting me to be here today. Boy, Idris said a lot of good stuff, a lot of substance there, and really a great framework for my remarks. And who am I, and how did I, you know, come to have any right to talk about racism? Well, I think we all have a right to talk about racism, but 10 years ago, I was recruited to this community from Connecticut. And I had a career with United Way almost 14, 15 years at that point, and was recruited here to become the executive director, in essence, of the United Way. And I came along with my family. First of all, before I got here, I had heard about White Cloud. And for some of you who are young, may or may not have heard that term. But, you know, coming from Connecticut in a fairly metropolitan area, it was a little distressing at first. And I brought along my family, my African-American husband and my two biracial children at that time. My daughter Desiree had just turned eight years old, and my son was 11. And so we came here with a little trepidation, a little like pioneers, you know, forging our way west from the East Coast. My husband is originally from New York City, and I was from outside Boston, not in Boston. I grew up in a rural community outside of Boston, but different kind of experience of life and a little more opportunity for multicultural involvement and engagement. So I was recruited here 10 years ago, and at the same time, it was sort of interesting when I reflect on this. The mayor's the mayor of the city of St. Cloud at that time was Larry Meyer. And he really was in touch with some of the issues that were facing our community. And he created something really with the best intentions, something called the Mayor's Racial Harmony Organization or Initiative. And I remember those early days, the first couple of years while Larry Meyer was still the mayor of St. Cloud, you know, in terms of pulling together 40 people around a table to talk about racism and how do we create a more welcoming community, because really that was the purpose of that particular initiative. Well, with the best intentions, a number of us kind of stayed connected to that effort and that work. And in 2003, I'm going to give you a little chronology here and really focus on Create Community and some of the work that we're doing in the community. But in 2003, we created the organization called Create Community, and we started it. And it was so funny walking in here today to see the poster board of Herman Boone and Remember the Titans, because actually through some contacts I had in Boston, we brought Herman Boone out here. I think it was, Hetty, was it 2002 or 3? 3, 2003. That's what I had in my notes, but I wasn't quite sure. We invited Herman Boone to come to town because we thought, well, we have to start having a conversation, and maybe we can start some of this conversation on a broader community-wide scale by bringing in a speaker that, you know, represents a movie and an experience that people maybe can identify with or might have at least start the conversation. And so Herman Boone came to town, and he spoke at the Civic Center, and then he went around and spoke to 7th and 8th grade classes in Sauk Rapids Rice, because where better to start than with our kids, quite frankly. So he started this work, and through, really, I would say, the years of 2003 to 2006, it was kind of the wandering years. We were trying to figure out as an initiative. Now, this is a community-wide initiative that's got the superintendent of schools from St. Cloud State, St. Cloud School District, and the university president has had a seat at the table, and the community foundation director, and a number of other people in the community serve on this steering committee. But we were, from 2003 to 2006, it was the wandering years. We were trying to figure out who we are, how do we get at some of these issues. Lots of, some reflection and self-evaluation on what do we feel and think about racism. And the group really started to think about how do we went through a process of defining systemic change. And as part of that, we redeveloped our mission statement. And the mission statement now is to dismantle racism through systemic change. Many of us, including myself, struggled with the terminology dismantling racism. It says a lot. Those are powerful words. But as I've come to believe and understand through my sister Hetty Tripp there, who is my boss, she's the coordinator for Create Community, and Deborah Lee, there's no better way to say it. And I think, Idris, you mentioned it in your remarks. We have to call it what it is. And any kind of other language and making it softer isn't going to really help us get at dismantling racism. So in 2006, Create Community did probably the best thing we've ever done, which is to hire a coordinator. And we hired Hetty Tripp, who is sitting in the back of the room today. Hetty, would you just, yeah. She actually helped to give the Create Community Initiative, which again is all volunteers, lift and support the work of the organization and helped us really to begin to focus. She's been visible and powerful in many ways. But in 2007, we had a gap analysis done, really to help us figure out, okay, what do we want to focus on? We had been a mile wide as an initiative and an inch deep. We really weren't making necessarily great impact in the community. We really had to figure out how can we do this work and do it with much more focus. And so after the gap analysis was done, we then had a business plan created. And the business plan, for those of you who may think, well, business plan, what do you need a business plan for? We wanted funding. We need funding. And we needed to figure out how to get sustain the work of this initiative. And the way to sustain it is through a business plan and making a case to foundations and national funders. So I would say that, you know, so we put this business plan together, and there's some three focus areas. And I brought notes because I didn't want to forget anything essential. There are four areas currently that Create Community is focused on. One is access to healthcare. Another one is access to housing. A third one is educational attainment. And the fourth area is awareness building. Those are sort of the four overarching priorities of Create Community. The Healthcare Access Committee is kind of charged with reaching the underserved or underrepresented populations in our community. And we did a fabulous thing last summer. We hired a young woman, Fartoon Hussein. And I'm not sure, is she a graduate of St. Cloud State? Yeah, graduate of St. Cloud State. Somali woman who is our first ever Somali community health worker. And she's basically, in about a six-month period, she has conducted 104 visits with Somali families. She's visited 60 different households, really helping to understand people, to understand Western medicine, how to connect with healthcare systems here in our community, how to make that a much better process for them. She's done four different health forums with Mid-Minnesota Family Medicine Center. And really trying to educate also the physicians and some of the other healthcare providers at that organization so they can be more sensitive and understand the Somali culture. So that's a continuing effort that Create Community has helped to fund that her position, and we're hoping to do a lot more of that in the future. So that's just one example around healthcare access. Housing access has been focused on really two things. One is how do we create more opportunities for families of color, individuals of color, to have access to home ownership? And the other area is around housing discrimination. And I did tell you that I have two biracial children, and one of my children, my son, is a student at St. Cloud State, and experienced directly some of the housing discrimination. It's not a pleasant experience, quite frankly. It's something that can make, as a mother, can make me incredibly upset and aggravated, but trying to figure out how to advocate for him in productive ways. But anyway, so the housing access is focused on those two areas. What we Create Community has done with the home ownership piece is we've worked with an organization called TRICAP here in the community, and they have a program called FAME, and that program really is about helping people to save dollars so they can afford their first home or a home in the St. Cloud area. We basically funded 10 slots for families of color. And as of this time, we have two families who have moved into homes, and we are hopeful in the course of the next year or two that we'll also have another 8 families that will find home ownership as part of their opportunity in this community. Right now, we're struggling a little bit with the housing discrimination effort. One of the ideas is that we do some testing with landlords and kind of understand how deep the issue is around housing discrimination. We all know there's an issue and a problem, but we don't know how deep. And so the discussion right now is that we put some resources together to figure out how to do some testing and give us some data to help figure that particular issue out. Another area is educational attainment, and I will say this has been the most challenging area, wouldn't you say, Hetty? It's just been challenging for many, many reasons. There's a lot of stakeholders. We've got a lot of people at the table with discussion around this, and really the focus is working with St. Cloud School District. We're trying to close the gap between students of color and white students in terms of test scores. And I'm not a big fan of test scores, and I am married currently now to a teacher. But we had to have something that we could measure. So we're looking at 8th grade MCA 2 tests, which test math and English and language assessments is an assessment for that. And so we're looking at those, and how do we work within the framework of the school district right now, and how do we do some other kinds of things? But a new indicator has just been is being seriously considered, and it's something called MAP. It's measures of academic progress. I really like this kind of a program, because what it does is it's a program that starts in kindergarten. We're hoping to fund this in kindergarten and first grade. Through 6th or 8th grade. And the idea is to walk with children, follow the same set of children for 6 or 8 years, and understand where they may have some challenges and some aptitude issues, and how do we support them, and how do we, you know, maybe provide some additional education around areas that maybe they need some additional work with. And so we're in the midst of discussing this particular effort, and I think there's great opportunity there for us to invest in that and work with the school district on that particular indicator. And I think finally the most exciting thing that we're doing is around awareness building, quite frankly. The committee, which is chaired by Deborah Lee, and again, Deborah Lee is the chair-elect of Create Community, and some of you may know her. She works here at St. Cloud State. She's a professor. She's also one of the trainers with the CARE initiative. She does many, 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 many things, and I have said to both Hetty and to Deborah on many occasions how much I am amazed that they're not exhausted with a fight they've been fighting for so many years, and you as well, Idris. This takes a lot of energy. And there's just so many dimensions to it. But the awareness building committee is really specifically focused on educating individuals and the community around dismantling racism, basically. And the work that's being done right now, there's multiple stages and phases of this work. There's so much going on. I'm not even sure I'm qualified to talk about it, but there are one-day sessions dismantling racism. There are 2.5-day sessions, which really I would advocate for, because quite frankly, I went through the 2.5-day session over a year ago, and while you might think, oh, well, you might have some propensity for understanding racism, boy, I really didn't until I took that 2.5-day session. And you know what? I still don't understand everything. And I think it's a lifelong journey. But there are those kinds of opportunities. There's three different levels of training now that are being offered. One is kind of a basics, an introduction to racism. And then you go deeper with level 2 and 3. And level 2 and 3 really get at understanding white privilege and institutional racism, which we talk about, but I'm not sure people really, really, truly understand. And then there's some really cool things that I think are really exciting, ongoing learning circles. And I don't know, have you been in any of the learning circles yet? Well, when you talked about food and cooking and loving to have people, there are some really exciting things going on. Good, good. There is an opportunity for something called Marnita's Tables. And Marnita is a woman from the Twin Cities who actually I connected with about 6 or 7 years ago. Again, you know, the circles kind of reconnect. She came here. She has a process of bringing people together around dinner or a meal gathering, kind of like Idris was talking about, and talking about a topic. You know, it might be immigration. It might be gaps in education. It might be a variety of different things. But bringing people together from all walks of life and all different experiences and putting them together, 30, 40, 50 people, and just sharing that meal together, which I think says a lot about that framing up the conversation. There recently was one. In fact, yesterday I sat at a meeting, and the mayor of St. Cloud, who is Dave Kleiss now, just hosted the first Marnita's Table event at his home about 2 or 3 weeks ago. What was exciting about that is yesterday he's talking about the State of the City address, talking about progress and funding cuts and that kind of thing. But I was delighted, and you will be delighted too, Heidi, to hear that he actually talked about that experience during his broadcast in front of about 150 people. He said it was one of the best experiences. He has a very small home in St. Cloud. He had close to 40 people at his home. He talked about the opportunity to get to know neighbors and really have their topic was immigration, which I'm sure was a challenging conversation, and probably there was some conflict there, I would imagine, but that's okay. Conflict is how we begin to start to understand, better understand some of these issues. But he talked about it, and I think it was the first one. I plan to host one at our house and around education and educational attainment, and bring together folks again from hopefully lots of different experiences. So I guess to wrap up, and I'm not going to take a whole lot more time because we're getting close to that hour there, Marie. I'm sure you're going to probably stand up and say questions. But really, dismantling racism is a lifelong journey. It's not something you read in a book, although this is really helpful stuff to understand the history and understand the institutionalization of racism. But the change doesn't happen overnight. And I guess that's why I look to people like Idris and Hetty and Deborah and many others in our community who have been at this work for many, many, many years. It takes time. It takes generations. But if we can all see racism for what it is, it's divisive, it's destructive, it's indefensible, then we can all work together to dismantle it. And who would have thought? My husband, who passed away a year after we moved here in 2000, I don't think he ever thought in his lifetime that he would ever see a black president. I think we talked about it a lot, but I don't think he ever would have thought that. And so for that and for my children and for our community, I'm extraordinarily pleased. So I'll stop talking now, and we'd love to take questions. So please have some questions, even if they seem really simple and mundane. Oh, come on. Yeah. Jane.
Can I start?
Please do. Well, there is an office downtown in the TriCap building where mm-hmm. people can go. There was a meeting yesterday, so you missed that one, but they have one every first Tuesday of the month. You can do that. You can also get in contact with the president, Katrina, which I don't have her contact information right now, but I did bring some of my business cards so I can refer you to her. So that's how you can get involved.
Questions?
And by the way, they're looking for volunteers also. So seriously, if there's anyone who's interested in going to those meetings and helping out where they can, if we could meet after the presentation.
Oh, there's got to be a question or two.
What's the name of the book again?
Howard Zinn, A People's History of the United States. 1492 to present. My husband is African, and I'm African-American, so I don't know if it's necessarily dating outside of our race. I don't really get any gruff for that, but there are some cultural differences and difference in religion, and there are some issues that we have with our two families, but not so much from the outside society.
Well, I could probably write a book about that topic. My husband and I met in New Hampshire. I'm originally from Vermont, we faced racism is everywhere, and we also lived in Tennessee for 5 years when I worked for United Way there. My husband was a chef. We were challenged in many insidious ways that were sort of more subversive and more covert than overt kind of ways. Probably the biggest, one of the worst experiences in my life, besides the fact that my husband passed away, I think the biggest challenge that, or fear, I guess, that I ever had is my husband and I were coming back from the coast of Florida from a family vacation with our children, and my husband had a child from a previous marriage, and the three children and my husband and I were traveling up Highway 65 from the Gulf Coast, and we were in our car and went a divided highway, and this is 1994, okay, 1994, and we actually, to the left of us on a hillside, we saw the KKK. We saw pickup trucks, we saw cloaked KKK and Ku Klux Klan, for those of you who don't know what that is, but it was probably the most fear I've ever had in my life. All I could think is, boy, I sure hope they don't see us. I hope we don't have a flat tire. We're on a highway. They were in a distance away. But it's fear like you can't believe, and with a family, and just the panic and the fear. And fortunately, we didn't have any incidents, but to be able to see that. And we were crossing from the Alabama border into Tennessee. I'll never forget that fear, the fear of wanting to protect my family. And it's just a little teeny bit of an insight into what some people face all the time, whether it's battered women or it's, folks who are oppressed. It's just was a pretty rugged experience in my life, but one again, I think that maybe gives me a little sensitivity to some of the other challenges that people face. So that was a long-winded answer, but I would be happy to talk with you offline about that, because it's definitely a different time today than it was, say, 23, 4 or 5 years ago. But there's obviously still challenges, and my children are biracial, and so they also experience some challenges.
I've got my 2 kids, I've got my partner, we're on the side of the road, what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. Who's going to stop? Who's going to help? And so, yeah, and they came up here, and it was, I'm looking forward, I'm a white cloud. Mm-hmm. So we're fairly new, and so, yeah, if you're going against the grain, there are people that do come at you at all different angles. But I just wanted to ask you guys, basically, my husband, he dated a girl in high school, and they had, I can't remember the story, I don't know if she was Hispanic, but they had 2 Hispanic siblings that were younger, and the way that they were raising the 2 younger siblings were that they weren't any different than you or I. They were, you know, well, Jane and I look different. And, you know, we're just different people. And so they weren't explaining to them, you know, Hispanics, Asians, mm-hmm. African-American, these sorts of things. And I wondered if you guys thought that this was a good practice, because I've found it interesting, but I don't think you're evaluating the ethnicity and the race and what character people have. So I thought it was an interesting way.
Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting issue, and I think kids need to understand their heritage and where they come from and their history. But then you also have to fortify them with enough strength to figure out the questions that they need to ask and figure out on their own. You know, and a lot of times, I know when I first moved here, I was criticized because I didn't live in St. Cloud, that we chose to move to Sartell. And we did, quite frankly, because of school systems. You know, when we moved in different parts of the country, we always moved to where the school systems at the time were the strongest. Because truly, the best thing you can do for yourself and for your family is to make sure that they get a good education. That is the opportunity. It's always been my belief, and it will continue to be my belief. And so we live in more of a lily-white community, quite frankly. I mean, I think we're on a street in a cul-de-sac with, 13 families, and I think there are 3 families on our street that happen to be non-Caucasian. But the school district has 1.7% kids of color, and my 2 children were probably 1% of that 1.7, I don't know, or, you know, 0.7-tenths of a percent of that data. But I think you have to help kids ask those questions and help frame things up for them and help them understand where they come from and what their history is.
Well, for myself, I had a wonderful neighbor who brought some books to my house when I had my son. And I tried to, because it was my concern before I had him, that I would try to give him somewhat similar experience that I had, because I didn't want him to have all this turmoil growing up and being, you know, a black boy. And my fabulous neighbor, Hetty Tripp, back there, came by my house and dropped off all these books about ethnicity and African American and braiding hair. And just last mm-hmm. night, we read one of those books. And it talked about African village. And so my son, again, got to ask questions about, you know, what does it mean to be in Africa? And is that what they do in Africa? And then that, you know, lets you segue into other ethnicities. I find it's very important used to treat people with dignity and humanity as you get older. It's important. There are differences, and we can see it. So, you know, at the earliest stages, if they can, you know, comprehend it, I think you should start injecting some positive things into their mind about culture. So very important to me.
You should.
To understand the segregation that we're talking about, two people who are different race and one is white, is really important. The segregation in this country is so loaded, so historically in its system. So you understand. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Things I was going to say, I just didn't say them. I just didn't get to them. You know, I just read. But thank you. You kind of framed things up really well.
Thank you. Yeah. I thought about saying more, too. I just did some talking points because I have a lot of homework to do. I have class tonight, and I didn't I didn't have time to do some what I originally thought.
Are you working on a grad degree?
My doctoral degree.
Oh, okay.
And so I didn't have time to.